And we are back. Black and a Half, episode number 165. And this, today, my friends, is a special Black and a Half Reviews edition, where with me, joining today is a very special guest to review two shows, two films, rather. With me today is, usually I say the very funny, because they're comedians. So here's the very funny comedy producer, Brian Trendler from Laugh Tech and We Fix Ugly Things.
Design
things.
Hi, Silas.
Hi, Brian. Welcome. Welcome to the show. Welcome
Thank you so much. Great to be here.
It's great having a fellow nerd, a fellow entrepreneur,
mm-hmm.
a fellow father.
True.
Yes, we have a lot of things in common.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, other than my good looks, we're practically identical.
Yeah. My hair's better.
Yeah. But. Brian came on to review two films with me. The new Disney Pixar film, Luca, and the new Amazon Prime film, The Tomorrow War. It's kind of weird for me still to say the Amazon Prime film, right?
It
doesn't roll off as much
Not
as
at all.
From Paramount, new Paramount Pictures production, Amazon Prime. Because sometimes you don't want just to get a box of Kleenex. You want to order a film.
You want to get a box of crap.
Yeah.
Delivered to your doorstep.
How come they don't suggest things that you should have with the film? Like if it's a tearjerker, they should be suggesting, do you have any Kleenex?
They should be upselling. You're right.
Amazon Prime that. Amazon Prime some Kleenex.
Yeah.
Amazon Prime some shrimp. This is going to be
on to
Yeah.
Yeah. Huh. That's a really good point.
I should be a marketing director.
No, you should really stick with what you're doing.
That's a good idea.
Don't quit your day job.
Don't quit my day job. So, Brian's a friend of the show. He's been on in the past to promote Laugh Tech, which is his. Well, you want to tell the fans, how would you describe Laugh Tech real quick?
I'll just mention it real quick. So Laugh Tech is a company that came about around 6 years ago. My business partner and I, we are actually engagement coaches. We teach people how to become better speakers, more listenable, likable, and ROI-able with humor. Because everyone is a great speaker in some way, shape, or form. They're doing it every day, whether they're on the phone or they're suffering through resting Zoom face through the umpteenth Zoom call, things along those lines. But if you embrace humor as a skill set, it makes you better. And it's been proven time and time again, you'll sell more. And again, you'll be more listenable, likable, and you lower people's guards. So especially when folks are transitioning back to the office place, et cetera, brick and mortars are opening. There's a lot of need for what we do for confidence buildings and overcoming objections. So we do that.
What's your... I want to ask. So yeah, okay. So Brian, what are you going to coach somebody? Like they're like, oh, I'm at my job and we're requiring a mask, and somebody comes in and doesn't want to wear a mask. What funny thing do they say?
That's going to be a curveball, and it literally
say like, yeah, you should. Yeah, I'm not saying to wear a mask of the virus just because you're ugly. Ha ha. Like what?
Yeah. That? We don't suggest that.
No,
because that increases the unemployment line.
I guess that's why I'm not. An engagement doing that work. Yeah,
exactly.
I guess that's why I'm not employed.
Yeah.
just keep doing things like that.
Yeah.
Ryan said I'm funny. and then you're also a graphic designer too.
Yeah. Yeah. I've been a graphic
designer. I don't think we mentioned that enough about you. We focus so much on the
No one does. If you look at my pipeline. Yeah. I've run my own graphic design company for over 25 years. We Fix Ugly Design. And I love working with small businesses that have no money. but at the same time, you know, businesses that want to get out the gate as strong as possible with a cohesive look from start to finish. So whether that's just the logo design, but then also print products, digital design. So the website, crafting, I don't build sites. I have a team that does. And then, social media strategies, you know, memes, postings, things along those lines. We can work with them for the marketing aspect to just make their business as best as possible. So
yeah.
There you go.
Whatever your needs are, I'm sure Brian can help you.
Yeah. Or if not, I know someone who can. Yeah. Pure and simple.
You are
not gonna lie, I'm pretty connected, Silas.
Yeah, you are connected, but not in a mafia way.
No.
In an actual way.
But I do know how to do waste management. Anyway, so.
So, today's show is brought to you by our sister podcast, You're Buying a Home with Silas Lindenstein. If you are interested in buying a home, whether here in Seattle, Washington, or anywhere in the country, you can go to yourbuyingahome.com and listen to this other podcast that I host. It's actually hit number 18 on Apple Podcasts last month. So it's doing very well. And you should. So tell your friends, tell your family about yourbuyingahome.com. Also, if you want to be a friend of the show, you can go to Apple Podcasts and give us a nice 5-star review and a comment. It helps us a lot. Or if you want to be, you know, spur us even further, you can go to our Patreon account at patreon.com/blackandahalf. And for as little as $1 a month, you can help support this program. Or you can even take that up a notch and become an Inner Circle member like Tara Widener, Keith Nagel, Stefan Ward. You know, get your name mentioned on here before we have too many of them. And then I can't do it, right? Because then it's just too long. But thank you, you three, for your support of this program and all our listeners. But otherwise, yeah, here we go. Episode number 165 with special guest Brian Trendler as we review Luca and the Tomorrow War.
Stand by to receive our transmission. Stand by to receive our transmission. Stand by. Join us. Impressive. Join us. Impressive.
It's been a while. I've not we were ahead a while. We were ahead in episodes before Samantha went away to get to have babies. And then so I haven't actually been in the recording studio in a while.
Yeah.
Deceit on our part.
Boom.
Or also known as preparation. But I'm glad to be back here.
Yeah.
Even if it's with you. It's glad to have you back to talk about a couple good films. A couple films.
A couple films.
Won't give it away yet, the feelings on them.
Are these non-spoilery or are these we're going to assume people have seen this, right?
No, it's a review to get people to see or not see. So no major spoilers. Like
everyone dies in the end.
Right. Like that kind of thing. Yeah.
Well, that would have been good to know because I did write down my points and most of them are kind of built off the assumption someone's seen them.
Well, you can talk around it. It's a skill that gets more fine tuned as we go, but you don't want to give big plots away. And that's why I'll take the lead on some of them to show you as an example on how how to talk around it without giving it away. That way it's like those of us who have seen it, you know, we have this like, oh, I know what you're talking about. I see that. Oh, okay. But it's, do you read reviews before you watch a film or do you just go based off of?
I almost never read reviews because quite frankly, they piss me off.
Okay.
Everyone is always so angry about things. Actually, you know what? Just this morning, just scraping through my Facebook feed, I saw some schmeck that was posting about how Steven Dorff is pissed off at the new Black Widow film, saying that it's horribly done, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, who the hell is Steven Dorff? I had to look him up just to remember his relevancy from 1996's Blade Trinity series. The guy's done nothing productive since. And he's like, I'm important in my opinion. I'm going to go back in my grandma's basement and eat Doritos. Yeah.
He also hasn't seen the film. He's basing off a trailer. He's like the whole genre style. He does a lot of, which look, I am a recovering theater snob, right?
Yeah, I know.
There are definitely still some theater styles.
Oh, there's drama in you.
There's some theater productions that I don't look kindly upon, that I definitely frown on. And
just go back and watch Stephen Dorff's performance in Blade and wonder why he has an opinion.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, I do get the idea that there's high art, there's high art, and there's more lowbrow.
It's a Marvel cartoon brought to life in theater. We should just be happy the special effects exist to make it possible.
But some people think that art, like film, should be elevating the human condition, and it shouldn't just be popcorn theater.
And they shouldn't be seeing Marvel films or DC films or anything like that.
Well, they don't. That's why he hasn't seen it. He's probably not going to, because he doesn't.
It's because he can't get. He only gets six stations on his grandmother's 1976 TV set in his basement.
You know, but I feel like I've always balanced these two worlds, because I enjoy Shakespeare and Molière and these classically. I'm classically trained as an actor, but I can turn on WrestleMania.
I love how you say that. I'm classically trained as an actor. We can't see it, but your pinky's actually out holding the microphone.
But I am also someone who will turn on WrestleMania every year and watch it. Yeah. You know, I really can. I can go.
That last part is not something to be proud of whatsoever.
How's that any different than Marvel? Really?
You know, it's fake, right?
It's the same people, right?
Marvel's real. You know? Nowadays, it is. It is literally the same people.
The same people. Watch them. I think you can find enjoyment in a lot of things. Just like comedy, I have a broad spectrum of comedy that I like.
Yeah.
And I can listen to a lot of different people, and I'm like,
yeah, yours is number one, and who falls under you?
But I can listen to stupid, I love a good dad joke.
Yeah.
A good dad joke that makes everyone cringe is wonderful.
Yeah.
And then I can also listen to Richard Pryor, you know, and enjoy enjoy sophisticated humor. I don't know. I think people are too complainy about, like, people want everyone to not like stuff. Like, I think there's some people who get so much joy out of, man, I'm going to shit on this movie that so many people are going to enjoy. Right.
Yeah.
Like, so today we're talking two movies today, Luca and The Tomorrow War. And right, what I see people posting about is The Tomorrow War, because clearly you can't let people be happy with an action film. Like Luca, they don't seem to care. Nobody's posting about it, I want to talk about Luca first, though, before we get into that. Because Luca,
do I get an introduction or anything, or do you just do that later?
We already did the introduction. If you were listening to the podcast, we did the intro earlier. Then there was music.
I didn't know you had a podcast.
As you are a fan of the show and know the format on how it goes.
Remember, you had us on 2 years ago, and then silence.
Yeah, there's silence. Oh, because there's no other guests in the world.
Yeah.
I spelled that wrong. Luca.
Yeah.
Okay, so Luca. Luca. Real quick to catch everyone up. Luca, it's a new Pixar film. It is rated PG, fantasy comedy, 1 hour, 35 minutes, written by Jesse Andrews and Mike Jones, directed by Enrico Casarosa. The cast, a lot of names I have not heard of. A couple I do.
Very diverse cast.
Jacob Tremblay, Jack Dylan Grazer, Emma Berman, Savario Raimondo, Maya Rudolph, Marco Barcelli, and Jim Gaffigan. I still don't know who Jim Gaffigan is in the film.
Yeah, you know what? I forgot the IMDb list. I think he is the deep fish, the deep down waters fish with the big glowy stick on his head.
Oh, really?
Just talking about whale blubber. And I think he's basically the father's brother, hence the uncle.
Okay.
Who wants to take Luca away for the summer.
Yeah.
Sorry, was that too spoilery?
Well, it's kind of way ahead of the time. Okay. Way ahead of the story yet. Okay, so the story of it is, on the Italian Riviera, an unlikely but strong friendship grows between a human being and a sea monster disguised as a human.
Mm-hmm.
And here's an interesting thing about the film. This was supposed to be the Pixar film of the year.
Yeah.
That came out in theaters. But at the time, as they were planning the release, they're like, well, we don't know the movies are going to be back yet, so let's just plan this to be a direct stream. How it would have gone to theaters, I still don't know if they had done it. I think it seems terribly hard to get people to tune in to the streaming shows if it's not like a major blockbuster that was suddenly put there.
Yeah.
A lot of people hadn't heard of Luca until right before it came out.
It was literally not advertised. This is like the Solo film, the Star Wars thing.
Right.
It was barely advertised because things happened ahead of time.
Yeah.
And I think people were surprised once they realized it was in their new release feed.
Yeah.
And then they started clicking. So.
And I did stop. I'm a bad father. So I went to McDonald's and got my kids a Happy Meal. Right. And they actually had Luca toys there at the Happy Meal.
But it'd be a Luca fish sandwich.
Well, that would have been good. I wish they had done that. Missed opportunity, McDonald's.
I know. I'm here to be the serious one today. Yeah. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No.
You were saying you're a horrible father.
Ivars could have done that too.
Ivars could have definitely led with that. Oh my God. That would have been fun.
Awesome. They're not thinking. Why aren't you marketing for McDonald's?
Because I'm not politically correct, really, at all. Because I would have colored the flesh meat and just made it horrible, you know.
Okay, so for those who haven't seen it, Luca is like a sea monster, and an early rule that establishes is that when you get out of the water, your skin changes. Like, once you dry out, it changes from sea monster to human.
Yes. So
for some reason, your shorts change too. I don't
Italian know. White boy is what you turn into immediately.
Italian white boy. So they establish that. He meets another kid his age that is a sea creature who's living on a little island outside of the town.
Yep.
And then they go into the town and meet another girl who is a human, but she's just there for the summer. And it's all about this big race. They're going to race to defeat this real arrogant guy so that they can try to win a Vespa.
Yes.
They want to go travel Italy and see the world, like see something new every day, right?
You should write for Rotten Tomatoes. That was awe-inspiring. I mean, you could put a Finney sticker at the end of that, what you just said. Finney, it's like I've seen the movie.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah. Very, very, very elegant.
So you could say it's a fish out of water tail.
Literally.
Yeah.
I see what you did there.
A sea creature out of water tail.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I don't know. My overall, I think it was a real, I think it was a delightful film. I really loved I think there were nods to Little Mermaid. Some people might say ripped off. I say nods. I also I did a little reading on the film, and there's also some nods to Fellini, the filmmaker Fellini, on there. Like, what's funny is, like, there were times that I was like, "Wow, this is beautifully shot," and I'm like, "No, it's not. It's not shot. This is not shot at all.
Yeah.
Like, what are you talking about? No.
Sure.
But they did do some scene. They do some scene work on there.
Very picturesque.
Very picturesque. Oh, beautiful.
Yes.
Beautiful film. Pinocchio probably took place in Italy, but I really felt this like feeling of being in Italy, and like, you know, everyone's eating pasta all the time, and
which is a horrible stereotype.
I know, but true.
And every time they had an exclamation, it was vermicelli. And it was like pasta rosa and minestrone.
They always say, it's a me, it's Mario.
Exactly.
It was like, who's Mario? They're like, I don't know, we just say it here. My favorite things about this.
Yeah, sure, go.
My best. I said it was delightful, a delightful original story.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was pretty funny. And I will say my 5-year-old will agree. I have not heard, she doesn't usually laugh much the first time she watches something.
Yeah.
She needs to see it again because she's just like, a movie. Oh my God.
Mm-hmm.
She was cracking up right away to this film. Some good slapstick on it. And I thought it had some great moral lessons. I did think that there was some, it tried to impart the, which Pixar Disney often does. But I thought there was like a lot of good nuggets in here that I would, like, I want to watch this film a few times. I think there's
especially
a lot of
Noki,
nuggets.
It's
of,
not nuggets. It's Noki.
Noki. A lot of good Noki.
Yeah.
In this film. I don't know. What were your favorite things about the film?
So right off the bat, I just have to say that I also found this a delightful and charming film, animated movie, whatever you want to call it. I actually loved it. And my kids loved it as well. So I have an 8 and 10 year old, as you probably recall, or if not, I have an 8 and 10 year old.
Okay.
And my son is the same way that your kiddo is, in the sense that he doesn't often laugh. Matter of fact, I put a mirror under his nose about halfway through every film that we watch to make sure he's still breathing, because he doesn't react at all. But he was giggling during a lot of the scenes, as far as the interaction of the cat, for example, that could smell and sense that these kids were sea monsters. Uh-huh. So that relationship really got him going. And so, okay, so back to my first tip. I love the animation.
Yeah.
This was actually one of my favorite Pixar films in a while, where I felt it was very Wallace and Gromit-esque style. It looked almost like the claymation style that they had years back, or that original artist did for those films. And I loved it. And it was seamless and flawless in the transitions between, you know, the sea monster scales to the human-esque form. I loved how they did that. It was a neat take. It wasn't spirally stuff. It wasn't crazy. It was like wax on, wax off. It was so quick.
Mm-hmm.
And I enjoyed their ability to have fun with that for some of the slapstick stuff that happened, you know, like the dog licking the kid at one point and his cheek is suddenly green. He's like, so and so forth. I think you hit it on this also. I love the friendships, the underlining theme of the strength of friendships. You know, Alberto going all out and him often saying, I'm basically the expert on this. He was kind of the show-off tour guide. And then you realize it toward the end, he's got this orphan damaged kid role that he plays. And he was the strongest and most sensitive character, I thought, throughout the majority of the movie, as he, you know, sees Luca going off at the end, right? Mm-hmm. You know, the things and things. So, and then the roles. I liked seeing a one-armed man, Massimo, really quite softy, the big, adorable father figure who looks scary, but he's functioning perfectly fine as a special needs type of individual. Mm-hmm. He was a strong character, and I really liked that. And he develops that affection and care for Alberto, and I thought that was really, really sweet. And then it's hard for me to say her name, but because I stutter, but the main girl, Guerra?
Yeah.
Guerra?
Okay. Yeah.
So she was a wicked, smart, funny, sassy character. Very, very, she was doing the leading most of the time. And I love the fact that they were talking about how she was going into advanced science next year, and she gives them the book and all that stuff. So I love the strong focus there. And my daughter really, really resonates with those types of characters. And she was pointing out all the things that she was doing. So that just made my cold little heart just pitter patter.
Yeah, it's nice to see, though she may have been a nerdy girl.
Yeah.
She wasn't being treated as the sort of underdog for being nerdy. Yeah. Right. She was just like the villain of the film didn't. They just were like, we're in competition with each other.
Yeah.
It wasn't because like, you're a nerd. Right. It was just like, it was just part of her. And it was nice seeing that.
She was very tomboyish, but like you said, that's great. She'd had that wicked nerd side to her that, I mean, she's running around enjoying showing Luca stuff that she's learning. Right. So that whole teachability thing, even at young ages, I've never seen that shown in an animated film before. It's normally very surface level, and this really got cool because she was inspiring him, which I thought was brilliant.
And then he wanted to learn, right? And it was nice to, they somehow snuck in this desire to learn as being just as a really good thing.
Yeah. And also that it was attainable, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And some people see the small village town and immediately think like peasants and serfs, right?
Right.
It seemed to be, I know we're talking about a cartoon world here, but it seemed to be reasonably flourishing, right? I mean, yes, you know, he didn't know how to fish until the two kids really showed him some of the hot spots, right? Which in itself seems almost like genocide because, you know, the sea monsters are like, kill all my friends over here.
They eat the fish. They eat fish.
Oh, true. True.
But then they also like walk them to school and stuff. It's like it's a weird relationship they have with, I guess maybe it was like a sheep herder.
Yeah. The herding sheep fish thing. Yeah. That was one of my most favorite scenes. Just the bulbous guy just, you know, I looked a lot like him there. That's really funny how they played that up.
I like this little, they didn't spend a lot of time under there, but creating this sort of underwater farm community. Was kind of, I love this idea that they're growing seaweed underneath
and tilling their
crops. And, and I was like, what's the economy based on? Is it the, like,
I guarantee you they pass shells for currency. Just saying.
They say, sand dollar? Hey, how many clams does that cost? Huh? my top three complaints. And I get it for the comedy, but the rules for being wet and dry were pretty loose at some times. Like, and I'm like, you can't dry that quick.
Yeah.
They didn't ever, it didn't make me think of, you ever see the movie Splash? Tom Hanks and Daryl Hannah, he's trying to dry her off before somebody comes into the bed. Like these people just like, it was like it was 180 out, right? Because as soon as you popped out, like, oh, nope, I'm dry. I'm dry right now. Like what? Your hair doesn't stay wet? There. I wrote forced conflicts. I felt like some of the conflicts in there weren't, I don't know. They just didn't feel as necessary, but they're like, I mean, I got why they had this triangle of the friendship triangle, right? Luca, his buddy, and the girl. They I kind of felt like you didn't need to force this conflict between the two.
Agreed.
Guys, they just kind of put it in there, and I get jealousy happens and stuff, but I did feel like I was like everything seems to actually be going along pretty well, like. And I think there was, I didn't write it down as one, but I think there was a problem that I don't think the villain of the film was really particularly strong. Like he's just, you know, which in some ways though, I think it's the reason one of my kids really liked it because they weren't ever scared the whole film.
Yeah.
And like they do get scared for most Disney and Pixar films. At some point they're scared. There's this part that they'll cover their eyes.
Sure.
They were able to watch the whole thing.
Yeah. I mean, scared. Dude, sword fight on top of the castle with Beauty and the Beast, lightning going everywhere, and the big Hurricane guy that just loses his beans and goes bonkers and is trying to kill everybody.
Yeah.
That's like nightmare fuel, man. Right. That was actually pretty intense.
Yeah. There's no scariness in this.
Yeah. I think one kid got hit with like a sandwich twice. Like a hoagie sandwich, Italian sandwich twice, just donk. I mean, that's really as violent as it got. Well, actually, no, that's not true. So anyway.
And then I put, I actually wanted to see a little bit more. backstory on the characters. I did feel like we just kind of met them, and I mean, eventually you get Luca's friend's story a little bit, but like, I just like, there's so much, I wanted to know so much more about the characters, like how they, to what brought them to this.
Sure.
Even the girl, like, I mean, that was her dad, right? Wait.
Yes. Yes. That was her father. Massimo was the dad.
They really did not touch on like that they were divorced or like why they were in the separate, why she goes to one place to the other. Right. Didn't know much else about her.
Yeah.
You know, so.
And I think that's asking for a little much out of a Pixar film, though.
Maybe.
It's like mommy cheated, you know, mommy cheated on a porpoise or something. I mean, there's reasons why they're separated. That's okay.
Like, was she bigoted against her one-armed man? Like, what happened? Did she say, yeah, I need a man with two arms in my life?
Yeah. Okay. That's just wrong that you went there. Yeah.
I don't know.
Yes.
I don't know what kind of... how evil mom was.
No. He seemed pretty skilled with the knife, so you can only imagine. Yeah, I'm just actually, I don't want to imagine because now that's getting creepy. So,
but, I mean, I did have to, I was scraping, I will admit, trying to find.
Okay, well, I'll be interested in how you react to my three, because we have some similarities actually, okay, between our worst three things, shall we say. I think that this came across, if you really want to, like you said, kind of scrape at it to try to find something wrong, it seemed very small scale, pun intended, scale joke there, in case you didn't get that. Let's face it, man, this is a story about two boys wanting to crash a race and get money for a Vespa to drive across country or across the world. Two tiny kids. There's some major acting out issues and like family problems that need to be addressed here. And again, it can't be addressed in a Pixar film, but realistically, if you take a 20,000 foot view of the storyline, it's really like, it's actually weak. If it wasn't fleshed out as well as it was with fantastic animation, humor, the sheepfish, and, you know, little things like that, that kind of lull you into complacency because it's a Pixar film and you're laughing and giggling and wanting to see what's next. It's really one of the weakest storylines that we've seen out of a Pixar film in a long time. Also, I'm super tired of the bully jerk character that has to be inserted into these films. Pixar is famous for it in that pervasive way where he or she is doing things that are evil enough to make you have to hate someone to maintain the attention and make the typical want result to happen every time. They could have made it a very difficult race, like more difficult than it was. And they could have had fun little things that created obstacles and challenges. There's no I in team, right? They could have all come together more, like break the triage and come together as a line up, you know, as a straight line of friends holding hands, doing good things. Instead, they had to have at the end, the harpoon wielding bully. Literally a harpoon wielding bully.
Okay,
that was a Pee Wee Herman ripoff. So, I mean, he was a little creepy Pee Wee Herman ripoff, and I didn't like that. I didn't think the bad guy was necessary. So, and then my last problem is, without giving away spoilers, once the ending happened and the reveal happened, this is a sea monster faring town, and they all kind of go, huh. Oh, okay. Back to doing work. So that to me.
What do you know?
Yeah. Well, what do you know? Well. Who'd have thunk? Gosh, that was interesting. So to me, like, that actually would have lend itself to a great part two. Yeah. I actually would see one or two more movies about this, right? Like, next movie be like, what's next in the town? And then do a backstory. Kind of like you said, like, I'd love to.
What's the economy? Like, if the economy of this town is based on fear of sea creatures, right? And now suddenly you're like, we're going to all party together. Like, what do you do there? What does the town do from there?
And I guess
they didn't hit on it that hard, I think. But you know, it is. It I think one of the reasons I was surprised it was actually going to be the Pixar mm-hmm. film of the year, and I thought it was just a direct to release, is I think a lot of times those direct ones are almost like TV shows where, like they used to say, like a Star Trek story that's for TV versus film.
Yeah.
Like the film one needs to be this big grandeur event that we're going after, like that can't be solved in like mm-hmm. just a little like happy 1 hour film, right?
Yeah.
Or 1 hour show. And sometimes criticisms of like Star Trek Insurrection was this is basically a TV episode. Like you could have just done this as a two-part mm-hmm. episode. There wasn't this the universe is going to collapse moment. And yeah, like Pixar, even though they do, you know, they don't do a lot of those, but yeah, there was no, did I put it on this one? There was no bigger message
yeah.
that has to be addressed. Like why?
Yeah.
Like this film didn't have to happen. Like I enjoyed it, but if it never got made, I'd have been like, yeah, all right, I'm still moving on.
100% agree.
And whereas like, sometimes I'm like, if Toy Story didn't exist, that would affect me. I think that would affect my life in some way. I'd feel an empty void somewhere and I wouldn't know why, but we would know the alternate universe would know, oh, it's because they never made Toy Story. That's why you feel empty. And then my lesson from it, the lesson mm-hmm. I decided that I think there's a lot in here, but I decided on discovery takes risks.
If you
want to learn things, you are going to have to take some risk in your life. That's
I like that. Yeah. I like that much better than mine.
Okay.
So mine was never watch a movie like this while eating shrimp. It completely changes the taste. If that is wrong, I don't want to be right.
There is something.
I mean, I had one of the little Costco plates. It was great. I'm using the dipping sauce.
Are you serious?
No, I'm not serious.
Okay, because I was like, that would be funny.
But that is one of my vices. And now I'm going to look at it a little bit differently. I'm thinking maybe that's the uncle. Maybe, you know, maybe there's something wrong here. But no, you know, I think I do have a new respect for Vespas, I will say. Uh-huh. I thought they were just the, you know, the nerd person's mode of transportation. I would like to be on one now. Again, if we're being completely honest.
Yeah.
But no, I think the power of friendship and sacrifice is what I got from it. I think that was beautifully and eloquently left behind when the movie's done. I watched that lesson sort of going into my kid's brain, you know, and that's really the only thing that's important. I can sit in the corner and just eat my shrimp. Yes. As long as the kids are getting something out of it other than, you know, just turning around and punching each other again like they normally do. It was an evening of peace. Right.
Okay.
So,
but you know, you do bring up a good point.
Oh, thank God.
But wouldn't it be nice for them to suggest like a food pairing for a film, more so that you don't eat something you shouldn't while you're there? like they should suggest this should be a seafood free film.
Yeah, seafood free, but maybe a Pinot Noir Gris or something, or, you know, something.
Maybe anyway. Have some spaghetti and meatballs with this film.
Maybe right? A sea breeze.
Yeah,
yeah.
A wine cooler.
I think that's a drink, right? A
wine
sea
cooler.
Breeze.
Yeah.
That's Seagram's. Sea breeze is a legit floofy drink.
Oh, is it?
I'm assuming we can look it up.
I will have to look it up though.
Yeah, it has to have like blue Curacao type of stuff in it, rum, you know, whatever.
And okay. So then I wrote for my final word on it. This inventive animated Pixar film is a terrific family movie with nods to classic films like The Little Mermaid and to classic filmmakers like Fellini. This mm-hmm. film will fill you with nostalgia you didn't even notice, and my verdict on it, as everyone knows, we have a 3L system. Either you love it, like it, or lose it. Love it is that film that you message people right away. You have to go see this film. Like It. A lot of films are hit my Like It category, because even a bad film you can like, right?
Yeah.
And you want to enjoy it, but you should check it out. Or Lose It is, I paid money for this, so you don't have to.
Yeah, okay. It's more like a Red Tide thing. Yeah.
So I give this, I do give this a Like It, a solid Like It. And Brian, how about you in that rating? Would you?
I'm much simpler, which should surprise no one. For my closing comments, I put 2 times cause sand to be in my eyes. And anytime I can react on that emotional level, it's a good thing. Okay. And it's a little shameful. It comes from an animated film, but I definitely gave it a Like It. I definitely fall in that same range. I'm not going to call anybody and tell them they need to sit down and watch this movie. But if it's between that and like Stephen King's Christine, I will recommend this one.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, this is a very different audience, I think.
Very Odd Friends. But yeah.
Hey, Willow, do you want to watch this cool movie about a car called Christine?
Which kills people.
Or Luca.
Or Luca.
Which is
maybe Cujo or Luca. You know, put those two together.
Well, it's about a doggy. It's just about a doggy.
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now let's move on to
good review, Silas.
Hey, good.
Just so you know, I'm impressed with your frontal lobe. High five.
All right. Okay. Next film. It's an Amazon Prime streaming film. Just came out this weekend. The Tomorrow War.
Mm-hmm.
It's rated PG-13, action adventure sci-fi. It's a whopping 2 hours and 20 minutes.
Written
by Zach Dean and directed by Chris McKay. The cast includes Chris Pratt, Yvonne Strahovski, and J.K. Simmons, amongst some other surprise acts. I'll say the cast member who I was surprised to see, I'm not sure if that's Mary Lynn Redscub. There's a woman from 24. She was a regular on 24. Oh, like,
okay.
And she's always in that.
I actually never watched 24. Oh, okay. I never partook in the 24. Well,
the crazy thing is she's actually a stand-up comic. And she's freaking
hilarious now?
She's hilarious. And the fact that she was on 24 in this completely serious role, because she just has like a serious face to her.
Sure.
So when she's acting, like the parts that she gets cast in are never goofy characters. They're like,
which was her role in Tomorrow Wars?
She was one of the soldiers that popped in there.
Probably someone who turned dial number 6 in scene 4. You know. Yeah. Okay.
But she it was nice to see her, and I was like, oh, I wonder.
That's cool.
I wonder how long she'll last. Okay. So
did she have a red shirt? Oh no, you said she was a soldier. Okay.
In the own, well, soldiers, you know. Okay. In their own words, this is on IMDb, describes it as a family man is drafted to fight in a future war where the fate of humanity relies on his ability to confront the past. I don't actually think that's an accurate description, but
yeah,
because I don't think
that's interesting.
But let me sum up how I saw the film. So from the trailer, just from the first trailer of it, is they're watching some big sporting event, and suddenly on TV, and then suddenly people from the future appear on the field, and warn humanity that in 30 years, humanity will be on the verge of being extinct because we're at war with an alien race.
Yes.
Bent on killing humanity.
Yes.
And from that moment on, I just turned off the trailer because I was like, I'm in.
Oh.
I am in.
I
will be watching this film.
Yeah.
You got time travel and you got apocalypse. Those are my two favorite subgenres. Put them together. Like, oh, what are we going to do? So, of course. So Chris Pratt is like the lead character, former military, that's going to go and fight in the future, right?
But not hard-ass former military. So, you know, he's just a dude, you know? But
he was a Green Beret.
Well, okay.
He was supposed to be the weakest Green Beret in history.
But anyway,
But he was a Green Beret, but also he becomes like a science teacher, right? Like
he knew how to do this and also say, check your six. So at least that's what they learned in the Green Beret.
He knew how to put the weapon how to load his weapon.
He did hold it correctly.
There was a character, yes. A friend of theirs, a black character, who was like sort of the comic relief part of it, who he was in VP, the series VP.
Yep.
And a hilarious role in here, or in VP. I liked him in this, though. You know, it's like it's always like you just got to have this comic relief character just to break the tension. And he didn't always like part of me. Actually, he did have a great moment in this film.
Yeah.
I loved. Without spoiling this, the moment of. I want to tell you, Brian, the moment of the return.
Yeah.
When they find out how he made it.
Yes.
I was like, oh.
So it was one of the most powerful scenes in the whole movie
for him, like especially for him, like that was incredible. So yeah,
I like the fact that he had more humorous lines than Chris Pratt did. I enjoyed Pratt in a more of a leadership role, even though that role kind of got spliced up when he met someone else in the future. And the fact that every time Chris was in an action scene, I kept imagining, because of his name, Dan Forrest or Forrester, I kept going, run, Forrester, run. And then to see his buddy, like you mentioned, having some funny lines, I kept imagining him to start talking about jumbo shrimp and kaijin shrimp and fried shrimp. I mean, like, I expected that to play out too. So I thought it was going to be more of a buddy-buddy thing until they ended up being separated, which is perfectly fine. So, anywho.
Do you, when you see Chris Pratt, do you tend to still, I guess, who do you see? Do you see the guy from Parks and Rec right away? Whenever he's on, or do you see the Guardian of the Galaxy kind of?
So like, I didn't start watching Parks and Rec until after the second Guardians movie came out.
Okay.
Because for some reason, I just that series never fell into my queue. So I've watched it about halfway through. I love him in it, and it's actually given me a new respect for him. So I still see him only as Star-Lord. And I think that's real limiting, but I have no problem with how he plays that character. I think some people are lukewarm on him. I like him. I think it's fine. So I like seeing him step out of the Star-Lord role. And that's why his kind of downplayed role in this, even though he was a good action star, I really enjoyed that.
I've seen him in some other things that I've liked him in. Like he was in that film that was more of a drama where he had... he was stuck on a starship, like he was awake.
And, with Jennifer Hudson.
Yeah, not Jennifer.
Whatever her name is.
Jennifer Hudson's a black woman.
Thank you. You're right. Yeah.
Jennifer Garner. The one from Hunger Games.
Yeah, obviously she's memorable.
She's very important.
Lawrence.
Jennifer Lawrence.
Jennifer Lawrence. Yeah.
So like that was like this is a nice, different, more serious role. So I know we can do some.
But see, I forgot he was in that role. And I think that's my one problem with Chris Pratt. He's kind of forgettable.
He is.
I'm sure I've seen him in 3-4 other movies. I can't tell you anyone other than what you just said, which was the future humanity is going to die. Let's all go into sleep pods. I completely forgot about that movie. Like I never saw it until you mentioned it right there.
I think he's trying to change himself. A little.
Yeah. He's trying to break out of his own stereotype.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which, you know, he was an executive producer for this film. He was like, it's his first executive producing role in there, which I don't know if that's just because of money or whatnot. Also, fun fact, this was supposed to be a major release as well.
Yep. Also,
Paramount. It was Paramount film. And then Amazon bought it because of the pandemic and then held on to it enough to.
Yeah, they were going to completely shelve it, man, and just go straight to beta and VHS.
Oh, were they?
Yeah, they were going to completely shelve it until Netflix bought it.
Wait, because COVID interrupted it and they didn't have enough faith in it?
Yeah.
Okay.
And see, that's only now coming out. And it's like, thank God it came out afterwards that they're saying that. So
yeah. Yeah, interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
So what's your best three? Really, really curious as to what you're thinking about this.
Number one, the concept story, like I said, they're my two favorite subgenres.
Yep.
I love those. So, I mean, I just think the concept is really this idea of And with this, the time travel, I don't feel this is spoilery. I love the idea that, because automatically you're like, well, why not just time travel to right when these people showed up and beat everyone up? Like, why not? Yeah. Why wait till humanity's dead? So somehow, you know, of course, it's time travel. So you have to have a stupid rule and a stupid thing in place. They're like, well, no, it's 30 years in the future, and it's continually 30 years in the future. And they can only travel back and forth between those two times.
Yeah.
So a week passes here, it's another week in the 30 years that passes. So,
yeah,
which also makes it a little more daring pressing. Things can still be pressing. Because that is the problem with time travel, is how do you make it pressing? Because you have to put some constraint on it, right?
Their reasoning seemed pretty forced, though. It seemed to seem kind of interesting.
Yeah.
Kind of weird.
Well, I did like that explanation for the time travel was, they said, look, if this wasn't a world-ending thing, we'd be doing this with mice right now. So, yeah. Like, they admitted, we don't even have the technology for this yet.
Yeah, we don't talk about Bob anymore because we don't know where Bob is.
Which unintentionally sets up a little like, oh, when it screws up and it like...
They had the sign in the background. It's been 64 years since, you know, a workplace incident, you know.
Because the when they do the time travel, the first part, Pratt ends up like his squadron ends up a victim of a little bit of an accident of the time.
They just forgot to carry the zero. They forgot to carry the one.
A little too high. Sorry, guys.
See that right there? That's what got me. That's what got me into the film. I was a little bored at first. That screw up was like, I've never seen this before on a time jump movie. I love it because it was gnarly.
Yeah.
Yes, I just said gnarly, so I dated myself. I mean, it was pretty effed up.
One of my other favorite things about this was Pratt's. I love the relationship between Pratt's character Dan Forrester and his daughter Muri, played by Yvonne.
Yeah.
Look, okay.
I'd follow her anywhere. It doesn't matter.
I am iffy about this being a spoiler because the moment you meet his daughter and you see that how into science she is, you're like, well, okay, she's a major player in this movie, right?
Yeah.
What is it? What is she going to do? And I actually mixed her up with somebody else. I was like, okay, well, when they go in the future, we're going to meet her, right? I mean, that's just like, there's no way that's not going to happen.
Yeah.
And I thought she was actually somebody else when they first went in there. I was like, oh, that's her. That's her.
That's Chuck's super spy girlfriend. You know, I mean,
is that her?
That's her.
Oh my God. It's been forever since I watched that.
That's Chuck's superstar girlfriend.
Wow.
I have loved her in every film she's been in, including series like Dexter and everything else. You know she's a pretty darn good actress.
There's no reason to not say it's not the same universe. That's what I'm saying. Okay.
Truth. Yeah. Yeah.
So I am a sucker as a man with two daughters. Anytime you introduce this father-daughter relationship and like possible strainings or whatever, I'm like, okay, I'm in. What's going on?
Yep.
Go ahead. Make me cry. Make me cry. Come on. Bring it on.
Yeah, sure.
I get suckered in for that. And then I will say, as much as the film does follow some tropes of sci-fi films and such, there were some swerves where they're like, oh, well, here's an obvious one. And then they stopped it. And they changed directions on it. And they didn't.
It's like they caught themselves and said, cut. Yeah. Okay, hold on a second. Okay, so the token is going to go that way. they changed stuff around.
And so I liked, and that showed me a little self-awareness that if it was on the sci-fi channel, they wouldn't have. They would have just gone with the trope.
Well, I think if it was the sci-fi channel, Mansquito would have come in and just killed everybody within the first act, if we're being honest here.
Okay, so what were your three favorite things about the
film? I think I set this up in the beginning. I love the action. I love the little interlude or the little prelude at first. You had to build a couple things up and, you know, point out that he's kind of a boring science teacher, so on and so forth. But then when they first did the jump, when they got zapped, when they consequently got screwed because of the zapping issue, the future jump, there was a lot of tension for me. And I'm not sure why this particular movie caused so much tension, other than, you know, when they're in the building, they're seeing those huge thorns sticking to the wall.
That was nice.
I was immediately thinking, it's like, I don't like scary movies. Like, I don't like horror movies, scary movies, like legit scary films.
Yeah.
I felt that feeling of, oh, is this going to actually be that type of scary tension type of thing? So I loved it that it was like milking the adrenaline and energy from me. And I was glued to the screen. I really, really enjoyed that. So it was a tension builder. Plus, second point, some of the best creature designs I've seen in a long time.
Oh, yeah.
Very, very thoughtful. And here's why. I'm glad you asked, Silas. I did a little bit of reading as well, and I'm super impressed what they did. These were based off of inspirations of termites and how they protect their queen, as well as John Carpenter's The Thing being referenced through where they found out about the origination of these creatures. And I'm trying not to be spoilery here, but there were so many nods toward H.R. Giger's Alien series with the Xenomorph series and how he found out that that was a species that was, they were almost like sheep.
Yeah.
You know, they just showed up and delivered the package, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So there was a level of fascination there. And then the whole spiky process of these creatures was a last minute addition. And I think had they not had that, they would have just been mindless drones running in sequence or some form of a pheromone secretion level design that's also been done before.
Yeah.
And this felt actually really new. And they were so agile, so fast, the pounding of their tentacles on the garbage can to communicate, stuff like that. I was like, oh, snap, he just did that. And that hasn't been done before. Yeah. When you have massive amounts of aliens, you think of them as herd and dumb, and they weren't. And I really, really appreciated that. So I loved them a lot. And then simply put, and I think I really just mentioned this, I like the twist on attempting to bring an alien invasion story we've all heard before and seen before, and enough twists with the future and then the potential future that fate actually doesn't exist and you have individual choice. I like that twist that they did. So,
there's
my favorites. Yeah. Yeah.
And I will say also adding into with the amount of action, it was like when I was shocked when it said 2 hours and 20 minutes, I was like, are you serious?
Yeah.
It did not feel like that.
Right?
No, I didn't feel like it was that long.
Yeah.
I felt it zip by.
Yeah.
And I'm old. Okay. The three worst things about the film. I will say one thing I felt like I mentioned this early, this lack of a greater message, because even the film Independence Day has a little message about recycling, right? And reuse. It does. It's like about,
and always punch the alien.
about obliterating your resources and then having to move on to another planet, right?
Yep.
I felt like with all this sci-fi, I was like, well, what was the message of this?
Mm-hmm.
Was there a greater message besides, like, I mean, yeah, a lesson that I learned a little about, but that's more about people.
Yeah.
Am I supposed to take this and what am I supposed to do about our planet? Like, there was no planetary level message for the thing.
Yeah. Other than duck.
Yeah. I also felt like, I will say, even though I kind of liked some of it, the ending, they made the ending way more difficult than they needed to. And it was almost in some ways also nonsensical. I was like, wait, you sent somebody in the future. People came back from the future and you're all like, hey, and they're like, yo, there's aliens attacking us. And you're like, okay, I believe you. completely. We're going to start an international draft, and we're going to fight in this. I totally believe you. But then people come back from the future and tell you what you need to do or what happened, and they're like, nah, I don't know about that. I don't believe you. Like, what? Yeah. What? Come on.
Yeah.
It was like, it didn't have to be as difficult. They could have been like, oh, let's put another team on this. But I felt like they wanted to keep the core people together the only way they kept the core together was to not be listened to. And so they got to go their own instead of a new mission.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. That pissed me off. And I'll say, despite the original concept, there was so much of it that I could see coming. Like the daughter in the beginning. I was like, oh, well, I know what she's. Okay, I know what's going to happen here. I almost knew everyone who was going to die. Like, as soon as you meet him, like, oh, they're dead. Oh, he's dead. Oh, wow.
Look at how she's holding a gun. She's good. Yeah.
Like, I was like, oh, okay. Like, there was a lot of predictableness in it, which is, I don't know, the nature, which is probably more common than not.
You have to have cannon fodder, you know, and they were easy to pick out.
Yeah.
And pick off subsequently.
I was like, oh, okay, here's the trope of the dad that I don't get along with, whatever reason. Like, well, obviously this is going to come back, right? Like, the old adage, like, if you show a gun in the first act, it better be used in the third. And they put a lot of guns out there that you knew were like, well, this has to show up again, right? So what about you? What was the...
I will reshuffle my deck here as far as my top three, because I actually have more. The predictability of the scenes was unbelievable for me. And I'm the guy who could watch Sixth Sense and not realize that he was dead. Like, the whole time I'm like, why is he wearing the same sweater? I mean, I missed...
That was a big surprise.
I missed everything out of that movie. Yeah. Like, someone had to explain it to me afterwards. Okay? So that caused me to do a lifetime of getting better at watching movies. When the young black student mentions what he mentioned in the beginning.
Yeah.
The one that was kind of not.
Yeah. Yeah. No, he's like, out. Oh, that was the gun.
He called out because he wasn't called on. The second he said what he said, the first thing that came out of my mouth is that's going to be a part. That's going to be important.
Yeah.
And I think the director and the screenwriters were trying to be witty and secretive, but it was like, it was just laid out like an a la carte menu. That line. And like you mentioned, the daughter and the scientist stuff. And then one, like, four or five other things that literally made me pound my head against the wall.
Yeah.
It frustrated me. And it actually took away from a lot of the experience. Cause I wanted to be surprised, and nothing actually ended up surprising me in this film other than the tension level I experienced at first. Mm-hmm. Right. Because halfway through, suddenly all the aliens were shooting like stormtroopers. They couldn't shoot their stingers to save their tentacles, right?
Yeah.
So that frustrated me too. But anyway, now, oh geez, okay. I'm just thinking about all of this without doing any spoilers here. Well, let's focus on one that's actually really important. Every soldier in this film were completely and literally useless. And I find that actually offensive, because the ones that were left should have been able to know, you know, not to reel it in and get right in his face or whatever. There were so many scenes where they were literally just cannon fodder.
Yeah.
And I didn't know if it was because they were trying to build up more value in our primary heroes and the gal, the daughter, who you've ruined that spoiler. So, and then also, why send the most important brain on the planet down into a scenario where she's going to be face to face with almost certain death, right? Yeah. Those types of scenes aren't necessary. So that frustrated me. Last but not least, I'm just going to say that it was an enzyme blocker. That was what the toxin was. And it was treated completely different, if you think about it, without giving it away, to basically wrap up the film. And that frustrated me so much, because this could have even had a part two. Like, this could become a series if they figure out some of the causality and the butterfly effect issues that they really just messed up on in this first one. And they could get so much better with one or two more movies, right? Yeah. Because then the solution at the end would have needed time to take effect, because that's what an enzyme block.
I see what you're saying.
That's what killed me for this.
You know, I will say about the bad soldiers, I think maybe it's more that there's only 500,000 people left on the planet, and so this is who you're stuck with.
But
this guy was a janitor. This guy was a janitor, and now he's captain.
Every one of the soldiers I was talking about, they were in legitimate, full on army gear.
Right. All of the transports were
basically in moist towelettes.
Right. Okay. But in the future, they're down to the last 500,000 people. So they're pulling everybody. Yeah. She's like queen because, look, she's colonel and supreme science commander of the world, because there's no one else left.
Basically, every guard working a toll booth, which is the most degrading position ever, because if someone busts through the toll booth, it's like, stop or I'll yell stop again.
That was all who was left.
Okay,
you're in command of the platoon now.
Okay. Yeah, I know that makes perfect sense, actually. I'm taking off my left. It makes perfect sense. Janitors and guard station soldiers. Okay.
But the lesson
the lesson
that I took from this was, and it like has almost nothing to do with the time travel and all that.
You should just read off what your lesson
was. My lesson is, don't forget what you have because you don't get what you want.
Okay, say that one more time, but slower, and preferably in a French accent.
Don't forget what you have.
Okay.
Because you don't get what you want.
I like that. Yeah.
Because Pratt's journey that we don't see is that. And, you know, it's got to get fixed. And it was interesting because I was talking to my wife about the movie. Because she doesn't care about spoilers. Because actually, she won't watch a movie unless she knows what happens.
Oh, really? She's one of those.
Yeah, she.
I know some of those.
She's too nervous otherwise, so she has to. And read
does she
about
still
it.
Ask questions throughout the entire movie?
No, she won't do that to me because she knows.
Oh, that's kind. She's
a keeper. Well, she won't watch a movie with me, really. But she'll.
Oh, well, that's understandable.
But she, I was saying, you know, like, it's interesting because you have this whole story of how this person's life went.
Yeah.
And then the aliens showed up, and when people come back and interrupt, they interrupted his life, right? So from then on, it's not, his story was already diverging at that point. He can't go back, right?
Yeah.
But, like, so it's just interesting, like, oh, so the life this guy originally left, what he did. And you're like, yeah, and I was like, you know what? I can see it. No, the guy was he was hitting an unhappy spot in life. And then he does things that he says, no way. I wouldn't have done that. Like, well, it shows that's you would have. You would have.
That's good.
Straighten your act out, motherfucker.
Right. Take notes. Okay. So my lessons learned, I think, is never watch a movie like this while eating shrimp. No, because the aliens are kind of, anyway, arachnid-like. Okay.
Don't eat termites when...
Yeah. Also, never name a species white spikes. It somehow feels racist as well as sharp, but not poignant. So I have an issue with that. But anyway,
is that what they call them?
Yeah, they're called white spikes.
Oh, I think that's just like when you call when people are racist. When back in like the World War II, when people decide just to be racist against everybody.
Yeah.
So that you're okay shooting them? I think that's it.
Well, come on, dude. You, like, Chris and the other directors and the producers sat down and said, okay, so there's, you know, every possible better name for an alien species. And they're like, ah, you know, this isn't working. We're, white spot. They ran out of White Claw. They're drinking White Claw, which is questionable practice to begin with. Someone spikes one of them with maybe some vodka or some grenadine or something. They think they're being witty, and then they're like, oh my God, we just came up with a name for the alien.
You name the alien. They don't introduce themselves, right? There's no conversation, so they can't. So you come up with an alien, a name better than White Spike.
anything like phlegm, you know, phlegm monsters, anything. Sharpie owies, you know, touchy feelies, anything's better than White Spikes. That just bothered me. Rubbed me the wrong way.
Okay.
So my lesson learned, honestly, this was, and Jimmy Stewart would be proud of me right now. This is a movie about second chances. And you alluded toward that much better than I'm about to, because I know you're still stuck in the White Spikes thing. Forrester got a glimpse of his future, what could happen if he comes back and makes the choices he's been told that he does, that then leads toward a not ideal ending. And he chose to, at least we're under the impression, become the hero, do the right thing, come back and realize that what's important is right in front of them, which is its own little, you know, future joke as well. But from the directors, not me. And it was actually cool because it's hinting toward the future does not have to be fate based. It can be choices. So free will still exists. Mm-hmm. And again, that was it for me, because I can't get much deeper on a Chris Pratt film. But again, I would still follow Chuck's girlfriend into any movie, any plot. I think that she was the most watchable portion of the film, because she played the nice scientist role, and that was good for her instead of killing people in Dexter.
And were your kids like, Daddy, why do you keep freeze framing this?
No, like, they're 8 and 10. They did not get to see this.
Okay.
Yeah.
PG-13. Okay, yeah. That's how ages work, huh?
You know how PG-13 works, right? Yeah, if you're under 13, you're a bad parent. That's basically what that means.
No,
I don't know what you're talking about. But no. So what's your rating scale here?
Okay, wait. My final word: The Tomorrow War is an inventive and fun movie. Great action, likable characters with a touch of heart. See it today. Don't wait for tomorrow that might never come. On my 3L system, Tomorrow War gets a like it.
Like it. Okay. So I'm going to travel back in time now, and I'm going to just take your closing statement and just read it as if it were my own, because I can't even top that. That was I'm going to give you credit.
I'm working on these.
If I was wearing a hat, I'd take it off to you. My hat's off to you. I definitely, you know, is there a middle between the like and the love? I mean, because I really like this more than I thought.
Strong like it. You can do a strong
like it. Strong like it. I Chris Pratt like. I Star Lord like it. SLL.
You know,
Star Lord like it.
And this is what I further want to say about this film, though. Is like, I'm hearing a lot of people dogging the film. Like, about, it's a dumb action film. And then you'll hear one person in the film like, well, I mean, it was fun, though. Like, yeah. I was like, can you let people just enjoy these films? Nobody saw the trailer for The Tomorrow War and said, well, I bet this is highbrow. This is going to be the finest acting. No, you're going to see some cool alien shit. That's what cool aliens. There's going to be a lot of explosions. I'm just going to enjoy it. I'm not expecting this to get an Oscar for anything.
That should have been the name of the aliens. Oscar. That should have been the name.
Oscars.
Oscar. Oscars everywhere.
These are a bunch of Oscars. So that's going to offend someone.
The Oscar statue is like, I'm not happy.
The Grouch Committee is like, no.
Yeah.
No. Yeah.
But no, you know what, Silas? I agree 100%. It's a sci-fi film about space travel and aliens. No one is expecting massive amounts or copious amounts of intelligence. They're expecting pew, 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 and poorly named aliens and action. And that's exactly what they got. Chris Pratt brings a level of freshness when he's not controlling dinosaurs by going like this. And
I forgot he did those films. Yeah.
Friendly and, you know, down blue, down. Yeah. You know, and he's becoming even better of an action hero, quite frankly, than he has been in any of the Guardians of the Galaxy films, because they have to individually flesh out every single character.
Yeah.
So I think if he pursues more like this, and even goes, you know, brings it into reality and it does, you know, like war films or something like that, I think he can sell it. I think he's good in this role, and I really enjoyed it.
I think he is handling his career well.
Yeah.
He's doing well for himself. No, I think it is a touchy thing for an actor to try to switch people's ideas of you. Like, I didn't get to review this on anywhere. I wrote it up, but like Kevin Hart, he like did a film recently called Fatherhood.
Loved it.
My review does not share that feeling on it. But like that's an actor trying to switch how he's perceived, right? Yeah. And you put someone else in the comedic role, right?
Yeah. I was drunk when I watched it, in all fairness.
Well, I wish I was drunk when I watched it so that I wouldn't remember it. But like it's hard to make the transition, because like because most of the time Kevin Hart's with like The Rock, right? And so he's the comedic element in there. And now now you're the serious one. So when you make these jokes, it doesn't work as well, or they have to hit so much harder.
Yeah,
and now one of your friends is the comedic relief, right? And like it's hard. I think Chris is doing a good navigation away from goofy chubby guy from Community into this stud that he'll be when he takes over the Mission Impossible franchise or whatever, right?
He doesn't run fast enough.
No.
No. No. Just look up Tom Cruise running GIFs and you'll get the whole
thing. His legs are too long, probably. You need the little short ones like Tom has.
Exactly.
But hey, Brian, thank you for coming on.
It's my pleasure.
And discussing these films with me. And hopefully, I mean, I do see you post about many shows and stuff, and maybe we can come on to, so I can explain why you're wrong about those ones. But
I welcome that anytime, my friend.
Need more of that as I'm, more of these filler, as I got to fill time while Samantha's still breastfeeding or whatever.
Nice to know I'm an appropriate.
Yeah. And Brian, breastfeeding. You want to come on?
Yeah.
Hey guys. So check out, as we said in the beginning, check out Brian at Laugh Tech, Brian from Laugh Tech at laughtech.com, right?
LaughTechNW.com, and it's LaughTechNW. Yeah.
And check him out there. And until next time,
take care.
Black and a half.
Live long and prosper.